Hello, you're very welcome to Inside the Studio. This is episode 14 today, recorded on the 1st of May, 2013. You're very welcome to the show. I am your host, Michael McAndrew, and wow, have we got a lot to talk about. I didn't get, on the last episode, I didn't get a chance to finish off all of the stuff that I wanted to talk about on the episode, so we do have a little bit of catching up to do, but really the main thing that I want to talk about on this week's episode is website design, why you should have a website, what you should use and why, and why I decided to update my website, change the look of it a bit. And I can actually take a look at that right now if you, I can basically bring it up here. So I decided to change my website because I actually talked about this because I needed that my current theme had kind of broken in the last update of WordPress. So I needed a new kind of a look. And this is actually what the current theme and the current kind of look that I have here on my website now is kind of just kind of, it's a temporary measure. I will be doing a full redesign in the future, but this is a temporary fix until I kind of get the new structure of my website set up. But it's kind of, I've got the right structure that I want, but I want that I want the design to be different. This was somewhat rushed because I needed a quick fix to the website. And I think it looks quite nice right now, but there's obviously a lot of things that I want to change in the future. But you can go over to talksabouttech.com right now. If you haven't already seen the new website layout, you can go over to talksabouttech.com now and check that out if you're connected to the internet. But I'm going to be talking about why, more into detail about why I decided to change my whole website layout, what tools I used and how I did it and so on. But I will be getting into that. But to start off with for this show, I want to talk about the new version of one of my favorite pieces of software for doing video podcasting. And it's software that I'm using right now. That software is called Open Broadcaster Software. I came across Open Broadcaster Software, I want to say, maybe 2 months ago. Maybe about 2 months ago, not even, maybe. And the way that I came across it was I was looking for a solution to, or another program that's very similar to a program that I use called Expert Broadcaster. And I came across Open Broadcaster Software. It's completely open source video switching software. And I tried it out and I was absolutely amazed at the power that this application has. And in many ways, this application has allowed me to keep doing HD podcasts and HD broadcasts because I'm recording 720p right now. It's so, the amount of CPU cycles that it takes up is so little. So you really don't need a powerful computer at all to run Open Broadcaster Software. But it's designed for gaming. But you can have multiple scenes, you can set up multiple cameras, you can do all of that stuff, even though it's set up for gaming. There are a few features that it doesn't have because it's open source, but I plan on, because it's open source, I can mess around with the source code and I can change it whatever way I like. But currently I'm using Open Broadcaster Software in accordance along with XSplit Broadcaster. And I use XSplit to do all my streaming. And Open Broadcaster Software, or OBS, handles all of the recording and all of the switching. Because XSplit allows you to stream at, because I've limited bandwidth, I stream at 360p, but I record at 720p. Open Broadcaster Software doesn't allow, it only allows you to stream the same at the same settings that you're recording with. So I just use two separate applications to get that, but it's actually quite easy to make those changes within the source code to allow you to do that. And there's a number of different features that I would like to see, but that I can add in, you know, later on. I haven't actually gotten a chance to mess around too much with that source code because I've been so busy. But during the summer, of course, I will have an opportunity to add in those kind of features to Open Broadcaster software because it's completely open source. But there is a new version released, and they actually, since the last time that I, the last podcast, they actually put out another kind of a bug fix release, like a minor release. But they released version, the beta version 0.5, and now I'm on 0.51 now. And basically, what they did was they got rid of, they fixed a lot of these minor bugs that were in the software, such as the compile times were quite slow for if you were saving to an MP4 file. They basically got rid of that compile time. It's much faster now. They kind of made some optimizations to improve the experience. That said, just before the show, the application crashed. Now, it's never ever crashed in me before. So I think there was something that I did. I was doing something that I would normally do, and obviously it caused it to crash, but it hasn't been giving me any issues so far. And that's kind of some of the disadvantages to recording, doing a video podcast with a computer, is that there is that chance that it's going to crash. But I make sure that I'm doing an audio backup and a video backup. I'm sending the live stream right now to livestream.com. That's my new CDN. I'm going over and back. I'm trying all these CDNs out for doing the live stream. But I'm streaming it right now to Livestream. And that live stream actually makes a recording of that stream, that live stream that I'm sending out to them as a backup. So that's the kind of way that I'm making the backup. But they also added a push-to-talk feature. Again, a lot of these features that they're adding is kind of for gamers. Push-to-talk isn't really good if you're doing a podcast. Well, you could do a push-to-talk for doing a podcast, but basically what a push-to-talk is, you press a button on your keyboard, and that will make the microphone active. And if you take your hand off that, or your finger off that key, it will disable that microphone again. So it kind of acts as like you can be like a manual gate. But something that's really cool that they added in was an audio noise gate. So I'm going to see if I can just bring this up just for my own kind of thing. But I'm not using it because I have my own gate, but you can very, very easily use it. You can enable a noise gate. Select an attack time for the noise gate, a hold time for the noise gate, and also a release time for the noise gate in milliseconds. You can change all those settings there. That is super cool. If you don't have enough money to buy like a professional piece of hardware as a compressor limiter gate, and you do a live stream and you want people on the live stream to hear your sound gated, let's say you have a lot of background noise, this is fantastic. This is a really, really great feature, and a very clever feature to do this on the fly through software. They've also added the ability to add an audio source to each source. So you can add in a video source, you can add multiple video sources. So to every video source that you add to a scene, you can add its own audio. So you can basically use Open Broadcaster software as an audio mixer as well. You could plug in multiple USB microphones into your computer, and you could set up each microphone to, you can assign a microphone to a camera. So that's really, really cool. Now, obviously, if you have multiple microphones, the best way is just use a mixer. That's obviously the best way, but it's kind of a cool idea, I think, that you can do that. They added in some really nice stuff like a desktop audio boost for boosting the volume of your audio. That's going to be quite noisy though, so I wouldn't recommend that you use that audio boost, but you could if you wanted to. What they've also added in is a video delay option, so you can actually delay the video. Before this, they've had an audio delay, which I actually use. I put about 200 milliseconds of delay in there, just to kind of sync up the audio a little bit better with the video. But they've added in a video delay option now as well, so you can actually delay the video and the audio, which is very, very cool. They've also added in an audio preview option and a full screen video preview. That's pretty sweet. So you can actually preview the audio. It'll send that what you're sending. It'll send the audio that you're sending to the computer back to you through your headphones. That's the audio. And for the video preview, it'll give you a full screen preview of the video. But the only problem is it'll only do, if you have like two monitors, you want Open Broadcaster software, the interface to be on one monitor, you want a full screen preview on the other monitor. It will only do a full screen preview as far as I've been messing around with this. And as far as I could tell, you can only do a full screen preview to the same monitor that the Open Broadcaster software window was open on. So again, there's a few little bugs in it. Unfortunately, you can't select which window you can put that full screen preview on, but it's a cool feature nevertheless. You have to remember, this is an open source program. This is open source software that I'm using right here. But there are some of the main features. Now, they actually, as I said, they put out a kind of a minor release to fix some bugs. They were having issues with the game capture. And I found that because the way that I take the video source out of Open Broadcaster software and into XSplit Broadcaster is through the game. Let me see if I can bring this up. It's through the game source feature in XSplit. Because Open Broadcaster software outputs, it uses DirectX to show that output. And so XSplit Broadcaster could capture that. And before I made the update, there was no option to bring in Open Broadcaster software as a game source. But whereas now, with the latest patch, they fixed that, and now I can bring that up again, so it works perfectly again. But that was just a little bug that they kind of fixed there in the latest patch, which is really, really nice. So now I wanted to go on, and I want to talk about my new website design. I decided to upgrade my site because of my current theme not really working the way I wanted it to. And as I was upgrading my site, I decided that I was going to upgrade the artwork, the podcast artwork. And so I actually, I got new artwork for, I actually made it myself. And most people will go off and they will buy podcast artwork. But I decided that I was going to make it myself. I'm not a very creative person, but I've always made my own podcast artwork. And so it saves a little bit of money. It's obviously not going to be as professional as if you get it done professionally, but I think I did a pretty good job. I kept the Inside the Studio logo the same, but what I did do is I put a bar down in the bottom of the podcast artwork logo for every one of my shows. And it's kind of a little logo saying it's part of the Talks About Tech network. And this is kind of some of the audio branding, or this is some of the network branding that I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make Talks About Tech as an audio brand, or as a podcasting and network. I'm trying to make that as that kind of a brand. So I made a logo for the network. It's just a generic kind of a microphone with a film roll in the front of it, so that kind of signifies that it's audio and video production. And I just put the Talks About Tech Network with a kind of a black bar on the bottom, and I did that just to kind of give it a brand and say, to kind of give people that thing to say that this podcast is part of the Talks About Tech Network. So that's what I'm trying to get. And I'm going to make separate websites for both of my podcasts. I'm going to make a Talks About Tech Weekly podcast website, and I'm going to make an Inside the Studio podcast website. And the reason why I'm going to do that is because I hope in the future that I will be doing other things. I want to define each podcast as its own brand. And so I want to define the Talks About Tech Weekly podcast as a brand, but it's part of a network. And I also want to define Inside the Studio as its own brand, but part of a network. So it will be part of the Talks About Tech network, and the talksabouttech.com site will still be there. And it will, the podcast, both of the podcasts will be listed on the Talks About Tech site, but they will have their own dedicated websites, because I want to associate not just the podcast with Inside the Studio. I want Inside the Studio to be associated with products as well and services as well, not just a podcast. So that's what I'm, that's kind of the thinking behind it. Now, I have not currently done that, but that's kind of my plan. And I'm going to be completely open and honest to that. I don't really like keeping secrets, but that's kind of my plan. And at least for the time being, that's my plan. And so I decided I was going to upgrade my podcast artwork as well. It talks about tech. I wanted to give Talks About Tech its own kind of a logo rather than it just being the same thing as the Talks About Tech weekly podcast. And then I made a new new artwork for the Talks About Tech weekly podcast as well. So that's what I was kind of doing. And then I decided that I was going to use the Weaver 2 theme. It's kind of a framework and a theme rolled into one. I actually did use Weaver 2 in the past for one of my website designs, and now I've decided that I'm going to go ahead and use it again. And the best thing is, Weaver 2 is, for the most part, free. You can buy a premium version, and I will admit that I haven't bought the premium version. I was seriously thinking of it, or was seriously thinking of doing that, but being honest with you, all of the features that are in the premium version, I didn't need. But if I did need one of those premium options, I would have bought the theme. The theme costs something like $50 for the developer edition, which basically allows you to install it on as many sites as you want. It's extremely affordable, and it's like half that, $25 maybe for the personal edition that allows you to install it on any of your sites. So there's no limits to the amount of sites you can install this thing on. It's extremely affordable. It is a little bit limited, however. If you really want to get a completely custom site, you're probably going to have to, I mean, it gives you 25 templates, 25 theme templates that you can choose from, and then you've got a number of options. You can go into the Weaver 2 admin area, you can basically completely customize everything there, but you still have to keep to that main kind of template. And so that was that. That's a little bit limited. If you want to kind of change things around, you have to go and mess around in the CSS and the PHP, which I did. I did a little bit because, well, for the most part, it kind of did what I wanted it to do, but it didn't do everything. But in the future, this is a, by the way, this is definitely a temporary fix for the time being. And in the future, I am planning on doing a complete redesign. I have an idea in my head as to exactly what I want to do. Basically, what I'm going to be using, I haven't decided which framework I'm going to use yet. I'm either going to use Thesis, Headway, or Genesis. I'm open to a few other frameworks as well. And I want to use those because they give me complete customizability. Headway is amazing. It gives you a visual editor, so you can actually create your own template. You can select where the content goes, where the sidebar goes, where the menu goes. You can do complete customizability things there. You can do the same within Thesis. I think Thesis is a little bit more powerful as to what you can do, but there's no visual editor. It's not as easy to do. I don't really mind that because I have a little bit of an understanding as to how WordPress works, page templates, CSS style sheets, exactly how a theme works and how to make your own theme. I understand how that works. So I could go in and I can adjust all of the settings there. But the thing with these themes is their price. They're premium themes and they're really, really nice. And their websites are amazing as well, by the way. But if you look at the pricing for Headway, for example, the base for Headway is $87. You get the Headway grid, you get blocks. This is all of their kind of visual editor type thing, and it's really, really nice. You also get a slider built in. You can also put in your own custom code if you wish as well. But if you look at the usage, You can use any site you own or business you own. You can use this on any site, okay, that you own. And you get 1 year of support and updates. And you also, you're free to remove the headway link from the footer. If you go with the developer edition is $174. That's the version I will be looking for because I'm planning on doing multiple sites. You can use it on unlimited sites, 1 year of support and updates again, and but you get a few little developer extras as well in there, like you get headway extended credits, and you also get a community builder block, and you also get early beta access to major updates. Now, if you look at Thesis, and you look at the pricing for Thesis, the basic theme is $87 again. You get Thesis 2.0, you get 12 months of upgrades, and you get unlimited forum support. Then they have Thesis Basic Plus. That's $164. That gets you 12 months of upgrades again, unlimited forum support. You also get socialtriggers.com skin and a personified skin. And then you've got the Thesis Professional, which is for developers. You get unlimited upgrades, unlimited forum support, social trigger skin again, personified skin, whatever. You get social media boxes. You get email sign-up boxes. So these are definitely premium themes, and they're definitely very expensive. But that's what I'm planning on getting. In the future, I'm planning on moving over to one of these kind of a frameworks and themes because they have so many features to them that I would really want in the website. I could go ahead and I could make my own theme, but I don't really have the time for that. And also, I think I would actually gain more from going with one of these custom frameworks for doing my WordPress sites. There are so many podcasts out there, and I mean so many podcasts, and their websites are run off Thesis. Thesis is a very, very popular framework and theme. A lot of the podcasts that I listen to and watch, they are running Thesis. There's a number of blogs as well that use Thesis. So I'm considering a number of these different frameworks, and really, before this, I never really considered purchasing a theme because there were so many free ones out there. But now that I've had a little bit more experience into WordPress and and website design through WordPress, I have realized that a premium theme will give you a lot of premium features and it will make your life a lot easier. So that's why I'm considering going with a premium theme in the future. And by the way, if you're making a website for your podcast, I highly recommend WordPress. WordPress is just fantastic. And I'll explain exactly why WordPress is the best option, in my opinion, for you to go with for a podcast, and pretty much why every single podcast website uses WordPress is because of some of the plugins that you can install. There are literally thousands and thousands of plugins for WordPress, and there are fantastic ones for podcasting, and I will get into that in just a little while. But I want to also talk about one of the changes that I made on my website with this new upgrade. I decided to look into comments because there were so many websites out there that had enabled comments because WordPress has its own kind of comments feature built into it. There were so many podcast websites and blogs out there that had the comments feature enabled. And I was thinking, geez, isn't that a little bit risky? Because, you know, wouldn't you be afraid that people would criticize you? Or that they would kind of write inappropriate comments, or if there was a younger viewer on your site and they saw an inappropriate comment, you know, that wouldn't be the best thing. Would you not be worried about that? And now I've realized that you can actually moderate that. And that's why I've decided to enable comments on my website and enable comments on every single one of my blog posts. Basically, it allows people to easily comment on a post that I've put out without having to email me. Because before this, I've just always, if people wanted to contact me, they email me. And so that's a little bit, some people find that it takes a little bit more time to write an email. Whereas writing a comment, it can be a lot more informal. It doesn't have to be as formal as an email. An email is almost like a letter. Whereas a comment could be just a couple of sentences. It's a lot more informal. It's a lot easier. And so that makes it easier for people to be able to comment on a post and give their opinion on a post. It also allows people who are new to the website and they don't have my email to contact me and to kind of, I think it opens it up to a lot more people to be able to communicate with me. Because people might kind of be afraid to kind of send me an email sometimes, but they're not really afraid to send to put a comment out on my website. And I can see every single one of those comments, and I can reply to that comment. I can see that comment very easily, and it's kind of a really great way of communicating informally. It doesn't have to be very formal at all in the comment. It also adds extra value to the content of the post, because I might have posted a podcast with show notes and all that, and people can read it, they can read the content, but they might realize, they might know more than me about a certain topic, and they might say, no, that content I think is wrong. And they can correct me in the comments section. And then I go, and I see that comment, and I'm like, oh, you're right. And then I can go and change the content. So that adds value to the content of that post as well. So there's a lot of advantages here to enabling comments on your site. And I already kind of covered the disadvantages. People criticizing you, giving bad feedback about your content. You know, it's always nice to receive, good feedback, but it's never nice to receive poor feedback saying how terrible your podcast is or something like that. As true or as false it may be, it's still not very nice to receive that kind of feedback. And, of course, people making inappropriate comments that are just stupid, immature, and completely irrelevant. I have no time for people who leave those kind of awful comments on people's sites. And I have absolutely zero time for people who leave those comments on anybody's site. Not just my own. And or people who just send spam. They're just looking for, they're looking to advertise a product. So they'll send a comment and they'll say, check out my website at blah, 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 blah. Or check out my product at blah, 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 blah. That's the only comment that's the only kind of content that they've put out there. I don't mind if someone actually adds valuable content in a comment or gives me feedback in a comment. But if they're just adding absolutely zero value to that post, or they're not giving me any feedback or anything productive at all, they're just giving me a link to a product that they have, I don't appreciate that either. So there's a lot of disadvantages there to having comments enabled on your site. But there are ways that you can prevent those negative things from happening. And that's why I considered comments. I looked into comment security, how to stop spamming and all that. And the first thing that I did was I enabled the Akismet plugin. The Akismet plugin comes installed on every WordPress site by default. It's one of the few plugins that's already installed on your WordPress site. And basically the way it works is it has a database of known spam. has a database of keywords as well as a database of usernames, as email addresses, and all everything to do with people who spam or specific spam keywords. And so what you do is you go onto their website and you get a specific, you sign up, you create a WordPress.com account, and then they give you a kind of a code. And that code, you go into the plugin settings and you put that code, that's your unique kind of identifier code, you put that in, and then straight away Akismet starts working. And it will start filtering your comments, and it will start start filtering out all the spam for you. So I can tell you that when I first enabled comments on my site, I did not enable the Akismet plugin. And straight away, I received spam comments. Since I have installed Akismet, I have not received one single spam comment. It is absolutely an amazing plugin and an absolute necessary plugin if you're going to enable comments on your site. Another thing that I did was every single comment that is on sent, that is put out on a post or on my website, is emailed to me. It's emailed to my email address. And I find that really easy because I always check my email. And if I see a new comment, if I want to check if there's any new comments, I don't have to go and log into WordPress. I just get it emailed to me. But that also makes sure that I see every single comment that is sent on my website, that I don't miss any comment at all. And another thing that I've done is that every single comment must be approved by me. Must be approved by the administrator of the site, which is me. So I'm moderating it before it goes out as a public post or as a public comment. So if a spam comment does manage to get through Akismet, I can see that spam comment and I can either decide if it's a valuable comment or it's a comment that is a friendly comment, then I can say I can approve that comment, I can say that's great, and if necessary, I can reply to that comment. But if it is spam, if it's an inappropriate comment, I can delete that and unapprove that comment, and that's that. So it's very easy for me to moderate the comments that come in. So, and this system is really working for me so far. I'm very pleased to report that it is definitely working for me very, very well so far. I've had absolutely no issues. I've had no issues with any spam. And when I started off, I was quite sensitive to people telling me how terrible I was. And at the time, I do have to admit, I wasn't very good. So the amount of people who would be giving me negative comments would be quite a large amount of people. So I decided to disable comments. And thank God. And but now I've decided to, you know, I've got a thicker skin now. I've got a thicker skin. And it doesn't matter. To me now, it doesn't really matter what people say, because at the end of the day, I know, and it doesn't affect me as much anymore, getting negative feedback. It really doesn't affect me that much anymore, so I don't really care about what kind of comments people post. But the advantages to this are definitely very, very large. And it really kind of opens up the website to more community. And if people can interact with you very easily, then I think that people will appreciate it. They'll stick around. They'll listen to your podcast or watch your podcast. It's a very good thing to kind of try and set up a community of people and invite people to join your community. And so I think that comments is a very good idea. And I never had it enabled until now, because I didn't realize that you could have all of these options. And there's a lot of things that have changed in my life as well that now allow me to enable comments. So, that is pretty much what I want to say about comments. So now I want to go on to talk about some of the plugins. If you're thinking of setting up a website, if you're thinking of setting up a podcast, it's very, very important that you set up a website, because that's your brand. That's the brand of your podcast. It's the home, it's the hub for your podcast, where everything is centered around. All of the information, all of the podcasts, they're all posted there. Any other blog posts, any other information is posted there. So, sure, you could set up a free account, a free server, a free website, but you don't get very much control. There's a lot of disadvantages to it. Like, for example, WordPress.com. WordPress.com is WordPress, but it's free. You can set up a free WordPress.com account, and you get a certain amount of storage. You get a certain you get WordPress, basically. But you're limited to what you can post. You're limited to the amount of storage you have. You're limited to the kind of plugins that you can install on your WordPress site. So you're limited to a lot of things. You don't have a lot of control. And in order to get that control, you end up paying anyway. So you might as well do it the right way. Sign up for hosting. Sign up for website hosting. I could recommend Bluehost, HostGator. Very, very reasonable. Maybe $60 to $80 a year for hosting. That's very reasonable. Maybe €50 to €60, really, for hosting. And that is very, very reasonable hosting. And I just want to add, you might be thinking, okay, well, this is a podcast about podcasting, not a podcast about websites. But I think your website plays an extremely vital role and an extremely vital part in creating your brand and creating your podcast. So I definitely think that it's very important to have a website. €50 to €60 a year will get you a website with unlimited storage for the content on your website, not for your podcast, by the way. Do not store your podcasts on your website server. Do not do that. Use Libsyn or a service that's designed to host media files such as them, because they take up a lot more CPU cycles, and your website server is not designed to handle media files. But basically what you want to do is go ahead and set up your website with Bluehost or with HostGator, and then install WordPress on it. And it's very, very easy to do. And once you have WordPress set up, there are a number of fantastic plugins. And I already talked about this in the past. I talked about PrettyLink. I talked about a few other really useful plugins. I talked about PowerPress in the past. But today I want to go into more in-depth. I want to go more in-depth about PowerPress and my personal PowerPress setup, because I actually spent maybe a week or two trying to figure out PowerPress. In my opinion, it is a lot of what PowerPress does is quite confusing. Now, from what I could find, there was little documentation. There was a forum there. There was documentation kind of explaining the basics, but there was no documentation really explaining all of the features of PowerPress. And the forum was basically for any problems that you had. But any of the documentation that I found was only for setting up one podcast. But what if you had a network with multiple podcasts like I do? How are you supposed to set up PowerPress? Because it seems like it's only designed for a single podcast. No, you can definitely do it with multiple podcasts, and I'm going to explain how you can do that. So, I'm going to go into a tutorial now. Just to put this out as just kind of information, I am doing this as a video podcast, as well as an audio podcast. And a lot of audio podcasters a few audio podcasters have been saying how you either put it out as an audio podcast or a video podcast, because if you are putting it out as a video podcast, you're giving the video podcast listener or video podcast watchers more content, extra content than the audio podcasters. The way I'm going to do this, if you're watching, you can see me going through the process. But if you're just listening to the podcast, you can just listen to me going through all of the setup. You could follow through if you want to go ahead and set up PowerPress this way as well. You can just listen to me and I will be explaining it in through the audio. So you're not really going to be missing out on any content. I'm going to try my best to explain it really well for all of the audio listeners as well. But I'm going to go into this now. And let me see here. So this is actually my... let me explain. I'm looking right now at my website. This is my website backend for my WordPress website, by the way. So this is my actual website. This isn't a test website. And this is, by the way, this isn't a PowerPress tutorial as such. It's not a beginner's guide to how to set up PowerPress. What it actually is a kind of a tutorial to advanced PowerPress setup for multiple podcasts. I'm really going through what my particular setup is. I'm not going to go through all of the basics. Because you can actually, if you go to the... under the PowerPress tab, if you go to Tools, you can actually get all of the podcasting resources as well as Blueberry resources for PowerPress. You get all of the Blueberry resources as well as Blueberry support and forums for PowerPress. So the first thing here is I used to use PodPress. PodPress is actually quite a similar plugin to PowerPress. It does a lot of the same things that PowerPress does, but PowerPress is a lot more powerful. And PodPress is a very outdated plugin. They haven't updated it in quite a while. But if you're using PodPress and you want to move over to PowerPress, all you have to do is install PowerPress on your site and enable PowerPress and then disable PodPress. And once you do that, everything moves over to PowerPress. It's so easy. I did it. Everything worked perfectly. It's just really, really easy to move from PodPress over to PowerPress, which is a really great thing. And I was postponing moving over to PowerPress from PodPress for a very long time because I was afraid it was going to be a very difficult setup. It literally took 2 seconds. But I'm going to go over to my settings I'm going to go into PowerPress here and I'm going to go to my settings. You can see there's a number of tabs here. You've got your basic settings, your service and stats, your media appearance, your feed, iTunes TV. I'm not going to go through every single one of these because these are pretty self-explanatory. They're covered in the resources for PowerPress, exactly what they do. And you can decide for yourself if you want these features or not. It's the same for your stats, obviously. You can obviously put some stats in there if you wish. It's the same for your media appearance settings, your feeds, iTunes, your TV ratings, and all that kind of stuff. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go straight into my audio player and explain what audio player I use. I use the HTML5 audio player. That's because it's compatible with mobile devices as well as desktop devices. And I'm actually going to click play on this podcast here, and it brings up this HTML5 player. Now, I created my own play icon. Let me see if I can reload this and show you. This is my own icon that I made. So I made my own icon in Photoshop. It just says play the podcast. It's blue, so it's got the same theme as Talks About Tech. And when you press it, it'll play the audio for you. You can upload that to your site and just provide a link as the play icon. Very, very easy to do. My video player. I use the HTML5 video player. I have created my own custom play icon as well, which is just a blue circular play icon with a black play thing in there. I also set the player width to 400 and the player height to 225, which is kind of, it's a good size for a standard website with a content on the left and a sidebar on the right. It's kind of standard. It's nice and small, but it's not too big. It's not too small. It's not too big, really, which is quite nice. And it also tells you that your image should be 60 by 60 for your play icon as well, which I've done. And I am using all HTML5 for this stuff. Now I'm going into my podcast channels. Now, I have a number of podcast channels set up here. By default, PowerPress has just podcast set in there. That's your default channel. So if you're creating a category, which I'll get to in just a minute, the default for a media file will be just this podcast. That's the default channel. But what I've done here is I have set up three other channels. The first channel is Talks About Tech Weekly Video. The second channel is Inside the Studio Video. And the third channel is All Episodes Video. So what do these three do? The first one, podcast, handles all of the audio podcasts for each of my podcasts. So Inside the Studio and Talks About Tech Weekly. That's just the audio. Talks About Tech Weekly Video Channel. That Talks About Tech Weekly Video Channel. What that does is it handles all of the video episodes, the video versions of Talks About Tech Weekly. That's the channel that I use for that. I have all my settings set up here. And by the way, each of these channels have their own RSS feeds. So if you were to submit, if you wanted to submit, let's say you had a video podcast and you wanted to take the feed of that video podcast and submit that to iTunes, you would take the URL of that feed, which in this case is talksabouttech.com/feed/TAT weekly video. I take that feed and I submit that to iTunes. Very easy. You can go through all the settings. Again, I'm not going to go through these because they're pretty self-explanatory, just to save a little bit of time. But that's what I've got set up. And this is how I'm setting this up for multiple podcasts, and for each podcast episode, or for each podcast, I've got video and audio. Do note that I have all episodes video. So if someone wants to subscribe to all of the episodes that go out, both Inside the Studio and Talks About Tech Weekly, every new episode that's created, if they want to subscribe to all of those, they'll subscribe to this all episodes video feed if they want the video version of all of these podcasts. And Inside the Studio video, again, obviously handles all of the video editions of Inside the Studio. What you could also use podcast channels for is if you had a 720p version of your podcast, as well as a 360p version of your podcast, for different qualities. If people have, if they don't have as good internet access, they could subscribe in iTunes to the lower quality one. I don't do that, and the reason why I don't do that is because I feel that it's a little bit too complicated. Some people mightn't know which feed to subscribe to. They might think it's completely just really complicated. So I don't do that. I just put my podcasts out at 360p most of the time. I just put them out at 360p because I think that's the quality of that video is perfectly fine, and the size is about maybe 150 to 200 megabytes. So it's quite a decent size as well. I think most people will be able to stream that. But that's what I do for my podcast channels for my multiple podcasts on my website using PowerPress here. You know, any tutorial that I've seen so far on PowerPress for multiple podcasts has only been audio. So I found it very difficult to be able to set it up for video. But here, I'm going over to the category podcasting. In category podcasting, I've got three categories. I've got Inside the Studio, All Episodes, and Talks About Tech Weekly. Now, for my categories, if I, for example, if I'm posting this post out this evening, later on this evening, for Inside the Studio episode 14, I will create the post, and I will place that post in the Inside the Studio category, as well as the All Episodes category. And then I will, let me create a new post, actually. Let me go create a new post, and let me explain exactly how this works. So I'm in here creating a new post. I give it a title. I put some content in there. And then I go down here. This is my Weaver 2 setting. I'm looking at my Weaver 2 settings. I ignore that. I allow comments on my post. And here is, if I scroll down here, now I get the option to attach the files. This is the PowerPress options to attach the media files to the podcast. I see podcast episode default. For the media, I add in the audio version of Inside the Studio into this. I give it an iTunes brief summary. And then I scroll down here. I don't want the Talks About Tech Weekly video, but I do want the Inside the Studio video channel. And then I add the video version of Inside the Studio into the podcast episode for custom channel Inside the Studio video. I give it a poster image. That will be an image from the podcast episode. And I give it an iTunes summary. Then I will add that episode, the video episode, also to the All Episodes custom channel. And I will add in the media URL to the video episode. And I won't give it a poster image because what I've got set up for this All Episodes video channel is that it won't come up, the players and links will not come up on the post. It's like almost an invisible channel. And that's because I have it already coming up with the Inside the Studio video. So that's basically what I'm doing right there. And of course, I also show the sharing buttons. Then I just say I want this to go to All Episodes and Inside the Studio as my categories, and I publish it. I put in my tags, obviously, and all that. But that's pretty much what I do. And then I take, for the audio podcasts, I take the Inside the Studio category feed, and I take that feed and I submit that to iTunes. That's for the audio podcast. For the video podcast, I take the podcast channels, which will be Inside the Studio video in this case, and I submit that to iTunes. So that's basically what I do. It's pretty straightforward, I know, but if you're just getting used to PowerPress, it can be a little bit complicated. It can be a little bit hard to kind of grasp, to get your head around, because I spent a week or two trying to figure out exact what the best way of doing this was, because before I would just rush this and I would just set it up whatever way that first comes to my mind. I have done that numerous times before in the past, and it's never worked out good, because what has happened is I've had to go in and correct every one of these mistakes. I've had to resubmit feeds to iTunes. Look, you want to set this up the right way the first time, and I did not do that in the past. I wanted to make sure that I'm doing everything by the book and everything right. So that is a setup that works for me perfectly. And by the way, then all I do is I set my home page to be all of my posts. I create one post for every episode compared to what I was doing before, where I was making one post for the audio edition, another post for the video edition, and another post for the homepage, which just completely did not work, mind you. I create one post per episode that displays the audio, that displays the video on that post, and I can take the video and add that to a separate feed, and take the audio and add that to a separate feed, and everything is separate, but it's displayed in one post. And that makes it really easy. In terms of my shows, then, if you click on the Talks About Tech Weekly show or the Inside the Studio show page on my website, that brings you to the actual category for the podcast or the blog post category for each of those episodes, and I have them as excerpts or I can't say it properly. Basically, where the post is kind of summarized, and you can press the continue reading button to bring up the entire post. You can press play the video, play the audio. It's a very, very easy thing to do. But that's basically the way that I've got it set up now. It's the right... I finally have everything in PowerPress set up the correct way. It's everything is set up the correct way now, whereas in the past I was doing some really weird things. I had a million post categories. It was completely messed up. And so now... I finally changed things, and it was a painful process. It was so painful. My website was down for, I think, 2 days and a bit, under construction. Me just trying to figure out how the hell I was going to do this. It took up all of my time. It was a real pain to do, but it was something I think had to be done. But so the next update that will be going up will be much smoother than my last. I assure you that it will definitely be much smoother, because I've got a lot of the hard work done now. A lot of the mistakes have been changed now, and boy, oh boy, if you don't get it done right the first time with your podcast, it's very, very difficult to go and make the changes. I had to rewrite every single post. Oh my God, I had to go and delete loads of posts. It was a pain, but I've got it done now. Another thing is, if you were trying to access my website over, I think, Monday and Tuesday, Monday or yesterday, I'm recording this on Wednesday, the 1st of May, by the way. You probably wouldn't be able to access my website because there was extreme packet loss on the server that my website was hosted on. They have completely fixed that now. My website's back up and perfect again. So no issues now, but I just wanted to say that my website was down. It wasn't just your internet, that my website was down on Monday and Tuesday. But it's back up now and everything is happy. So, that pretty much wraps up this episode of Inside the Studio. I hope I didn't completely mess up your brains about PowerPress, but if you want to set up multiple podcasts using PowerPress on a single website, which not a lot of people do, actually, a lot of people like to have separate websites for each of their podcasts, that's basically the way that you that's the way that you can do it if you have video and audio podcasts. So that's the way I'm doing it, and that pretty much wraps up this episode for today. You can contact me, you can follow me on Twitter at talksabouttech1. Follow me there on Twitter. You can also email me, michael@talksabouttech.com. Email me your questions. Let's say you have a question about PowerPress, please do email me about it, and I will try and get back to you and answer that in the best way that I possibly can. You can also follow me on Google+. Michael McAndrew is my name there. And that pretty much wraps it up for today. I want to thank you all for watching or listening to this episode of Inside the Studio. I'll be back next week for another episode. See you then. Goodbye.